getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those listening live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we're going to take you all around the hockey world. Lots of Winnipeg Jets news, lots of free agency news, lots of potential trade rumors, lots of NHL draft news, as we are into very much with the season having wrapped up earlier this week, the hot stove portion of the NHL season, especially leading into the draft next week in Sunrise, Florida, and NHL free agency on Canada Day, July 1. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. And I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, you're both looking well. Nice to see you on this Saturday morning.
What's happening, Drew? What's going on?
Well, I'm sitting here doing a radio show with you. It seems fairly apparent what's going on.
I know. In all seriousness, though, you mentioned, you know, there's actually been some Jets news. It's pretty refreshing, guys. There hasn't been too much Jets news since the Jets were eliminated in the first round, and I'm getting pretty excited. Dave Minuk and I are heading down to the draft Thursday. We're leaving.
Hang on. 1 minute into the show, he's got his first Dave Minuk reference, so you're well on schedule there, Ezzy.
Yeah, I got to get that in. So, you know, you mentioned there's a lot of trade talk heating up. When you have certainly not the Winnipeg Jets because they have two first-round picks, but you have six teams that don't have a first-round pick, right? And there's going to be some moves, I think, and I'm ready to go here, Drew.
You know, I'm just happy, Ezzy, that you're here after you broke into the Bernstein's computer system to find out how they make their omelets.
I don't get that reference at all.
True, have you not been watching the news with the Houston Astros and the St. Louis
Cardinals? Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. That one was a little bit, that one went right over my head there, Richie, but I appreciate the attempted humor there. That was okay.
Stuff like that usually doesn't go over your head. I'm surprised that went over your head.
That's true. That one went right over my head. I'm not quite sharp enough yet. Give me a couple minutes and then I'll be right on the ball. Let's get started with the Jets news that you mentioned, Ezzy. We'll start with the signing of Anthony Peluso to a new two-year contract worth a average annual value, a salary cap hit each year of $675,000. Peluso played in 49 games last season and registered one goal and one assist to go along with 86 penalty minutes. How surprised were you that Anthony Peluso, never mind, got a two-year deal, but that he didn't get a two-way contract?
Yeah, Richie, a little bit surprised, but I can totally understand why Anthony Peluso was brought back. And, you know, it's been talked about quite a bit on the station. I know Gary and Huss were talking about it Thursday when they had Peluso on. It's Anthony Peluso didn't play a lot last year. And I think one of the main reasons why he didn't play, Richie, is because he showed less discipline than he did in previous years. And Anthony Peluso, you know what you're getting. He's one of the toughest guys in the NHL. I mean, he's a feared fighter. Make no mistake. You know, that element of the game, he's very good at. I don't think I've ever seen him lose a fight. That aspect of the game is obviously diminishing, Richie. Mm-hmm. Anthony Peluso also didn't have very good offensive numbers, and that's why Chris Thorburn played, I think he played every game. If not every game, he only missed a few games this year. And I'm not surprised, maybe, you know, that it wasn't a two-way deal and they gave him the extra year, but that's why he's on the team. And I know Gary was talking about how having a tough guy on the team with younger players, it kind of makes them feel safer. But
isn't that what Chris Thorburn's there for, though?
Well, there's a lot of guys that can provide that element. I mean, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's got toughness. Mark Stewart's got toughness. So having another player, I guess something happens to Chris Thorburn. I understand that. But to me, it's his that element of the fighting element. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff, when he was a hockey player, he fought. And I think this team kind of has that now, that a bit of that identity. They not a lot of teams now, Richie, have that kind of designated enforcer. And Thorburn isn't a designated enforcer. He can play a little bit more. He's a little bit more defensively responsible. But, you know, to me, you know what you're getting with Anthony Peluso, and he's probably not going to play more than 50 games next year. But when they need to have that type of presence in the lineup, no different than having a Daniel Carcillo in Chicago. To me, the whole key, though, Rich, is Peluso's got to be more disciplined.
Well, I don't even care about that. You just have to make sure that you're willing to eat the contract if you have to send him to the minors. That's the key to me. If you have enough good players that he is not an NHL roster player on that 23-man roster, you have to be willing to send that contract to the minors and pay him that money. And I guess they are if they sign him to that deal and for a two-year term. I think if Anthony Peluso hits the market on July 1, he doesn't get a one-way deal, and I don't think he gets more than 1 year. So I think he got 2 years. I don't know why. Like, it's the same thing, and with due respect to Chris Thorburn, I don't know why Chris Thorburn got 3 years last year. I just don't think they would get that term on the market. You know, at the end of the day, we're leading off here talking about a fringe player who's your 13th, 14th forward that really won't have any impact on the game at all. And it shows you that we haven't really got to the big stories of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Ladd and Byfuglien and, you know, possible trades and things like that. Those are the big stories. But this is obviously the one that happened this week. I mean, Anthony Peluso is not a top 12 guy. He's not a top 12 guy. He can't score. Can't make too many plays. He's tough as nails. I agree. That's the absolutely tough as nails. But the fighter is going by the wayside here. I mean, aside from the Jets, nobody's ever thought this guy's an NHL player. I mean, never. In St. Louis, it wasn't like that system there. It wasn't like he was going to come up and be an impact guy. And he's got, I guess, what, two-year deals now out of this? And
yeah, with a raise this time. I mean, he was coming off a contract where his salary cap hit was $562,500, and he gets a bit of a raise.
I'm not sure what the minimum is this year. I know it goes up annually. So
yeah.
In any event, Drew, the contract is not going to hurt you in terms of the money, so long as you're okay to eat it on the because you're not going to be a cap ceiling team. Okay, we know that they're not going to be a cap ceiling team. So long as they're willing to eat that contract in the minors and pay a little bit more than what their internal budget was, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters in the sense that sure, it could be money, $100,000 or $50,000, whatever it is, on somebody else, but it's not going to make or break the team. But I just don't know why. Again, you give him 2 years.
At the end of the day, if Anthony Peluso wants to play more this year, he's got to be better in his own zone. Better without the puck. He's got to take less minor penalties. Sure, if Anthony Peluso is out there and the other team has someone that wants to tango, he's going to be the guy. Unless you don't want to step up against Anthony Peluso, because if you've seen a lot of his fights over the years,
but
he's a scary guy.
Of course he's a scary guy, but I mean, is he necessarily that guy? I mean, you look at the game against Chicago last year after Carcillo came back after the cross-check on Perreault. And he fought. He didn't fight Peluso. He fought Thorburn because Thorburn almost gets the veteran prerogative to take that fight. And so then
the problem is when you have both of them in the roster at the same time, Drew.
Right.
That's a depth issue.
Okay, which I completely agree with. But I mean, then I just don't get why. Like you said, truthfully, it really isn't going to be a significant issue at all.
No, I mean, we're breaking down because nothing else has happened this week.
Well, he's got to contribute, though, Richie, in other ways. I mean,
but what's he going to do?
But if he doesn't, we'll get exactly what we got this year. He'll play 30 or 40 games. If there's a guy that wants to fight, he'll fight. He'll probably pay 5 minutes a game.
That's right.
It's up to him if he wants to expand his role.
Does he have the skill set to expand his role? I don't think he necessarily does.
I think as he does, drop him in against tough teams. Drop him in against teams that are big with the fighter, which is less teams and less teams every year.
Yeah. And and like you said, it's ultimately not going to matter very much. But it's bizarre that they decided to give him the second year. I mean, if you come to him and you say, here's a one-year, one-way deal, taking it.
It's the same thing Cheval did after last time. He signed a bunch of guys, a couple guys to two-year deals on very low term.
Mm-hmm.
He said that with Hutchinson. He's done different guys. He wants the security of, maybe we'll get a cheap year out of you and... Or we just like the security of having that many roster players there and allows holes to fill, and we'll deal with it if we have a problem later on. I mean, I see what he's doing. I don't necessarily agree with it. But again, these are the contracts that we're talking about here are so minimal in value on the scale of NHL contracts that it really shouldn't make or break the squad. What's going to make or break the squad is what they do with Dustin Byfuglien and what they do with Andrew Ladd.
And that's something, of course, we will keep an eye on throughout the summer and as the events unfold. The other signing the Jets made this year, and this one's a more significant one, is re-signing RFA defenseman Ben Chiarot to a two-year contract with a salary cap hit of $850,000. This is a one-way deal, of course. Chiarot was one of the most pleasant surprises, I thought, on the Jets last year, sort of stepping in when the team had their injuries on the back end, were rid riddled with injuries, and he came in and he played a number of games with Dustin Byfuglien and was not flashy by any stretch. Mm-hmm. He had 2 goals and 6 assists last year for 8 points, but he was solid and he was perfectly serviceable. And if he's your 6-7 guy next year, the Jets are probably pretty happy with that. And if he plays up the lineup, that's even better for what they're paying here.
It's better for what they're paying. It's better for the team as a whole. That means other guys probably are struggling. The interesting part to me, you knew he'd get done. The interesting part to me now, guys, is that the Jets have 8 NHL defensemen on one-way contracts. Uh-huh. I'm including Trouba there. So they have 8 NHL defensemen on one-way contracts. So if you have a 23-man roster and you're carrying your 2 goalies and your 8 defensemen, that means you have room for 13 forwards. So if Anthony Peluso is your plus one, is your 13th forward, then like that's the next guy going in. Based on the way the roster is, unless you're going to buy out Grant Kletsam, or you're going to trade Grant Kletsam, or you're going to make a trade with Byfuglien, which we've suggested for months now. So that's the interesting part to me. I understand the contract guy. He doesn't have much leverage. You're going to sign him, see what he can do. You get the 2 years again, so maybe you get that's Sheveldayoff does that, gets that extra year. He thinks he can get some on the cheap, especially Sherrod, who should improve, as opposed to Peluso, who's probably going to be the same. How does that work roster wise now? They're going to have their 2 goalies.
Yeah.
They're going to have their 8D. We'll see. And they already have, they have to fill about 4 or 5 more forward spots. So, and we'll see, like a combination of internally and free agency or trades, whatever it may be. But that makes it more interesting. Going into the draft, okay, what are they going to do? They're not going to add another defenseman. Remember, they have Morrissey, who's not part of the 8. So that's 9.
Right.
So Morrissey starts the season in the AHL, which I think is a good decision right now, based on what I see roster-wise. But that can change in a matter of moments.
Yeah, I really like the Ben Chiarot signing. I think we all like the signing. He had a breakthrough season. It was his rookie season. But he really impressed me. And he was really good in St. John's. We heard that he was a very solid player in St. John's and saw him play a little bit. But as you mentioned, especially with Buff, and he was, insulated playing with Dustin Byfuglien. And, you kind of mentioned the offensive numbers, and he's young. Those can get better. But I don't think Ben Chiarot is ever going to be a 50-point defenseman.
That's
How many 50-point defensemen are there, really? There's only a handful in the NHL. But, he really impressed me. At the end of the day, he's a defenseman, and he takes care of that. He's physical. He's got a pretty underrated shot. I actually thought the few opportunities he got on the second power play unit, he's actually got a pretty good shot from the point there. And I think, as he progresses in his NHL career, he'll start to get kind of more of those defensive responsibilities. But it looks like, he has a really good chance at being that third pairing defenseman consistently for the Jets. And, we've talked about it a lot. The Jets are really strong on the right side. He's a left-shot defenseman. And as Richie mentioned, with Josh Morrissey being a left-shooting defenseman, it kind of looks like there's a good chance that they start him off slower maybe than you would have thought based on, him being a first-round pick.
Him being Morrissey in this instance.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think Josh Morrissey has a huge amount of upside. Every level he's played at, he's excelled. But he's young. He's only 20 years old. So there's nothing wrong with him.
Right.
He's still going to be playing at the MTS Center for the Moose, and there's nothing, maybe he plays 20 or 30 games. Hey, maybe Josh Morrissey plays a full season. We don't know. But as Richie mentioned, with the amount of defensemen, you got to include Jay Harrison in there.
Yeah, well, he's in there as one of the one-way defensemen.
Harrison and Kletsam are the two extras right now to me.
Well, Kletsam, the big question mark around Kletsam, of course, is his health status.
And you can't, not that the Jets are going to buy anybody out, but if they wanted to, Kletsam has to be healthy to buy. You can't buy out a guy who's injured,
absolutely. I mean, he's been on, he missed the majority of last year with his back problems. Probably the last 2 years he's missed the majority of with various health problems. So you have no idea what you're getting from Grant Kletsam at this point in time. I mean, you knew, like you said, Richie, you knew they were going to re-sign Ben Chiarot because he was an RFA. He didn't have any leverage whatsoever. The $850,000 a year is a perfectly reasonable number. And if he continues to progress or continue, even if he plays at the exact same level that we saw this year, 2 years from now, he's going to get an even bigger contract where it'll be in the millions of dollars range.
I think contract aside, Ben Chiarot fits what the Jets do perfectly. They have a lot of offensive-minded defensemen. He's big. He can skate.
That's totally true.
Physical. He complements the other defensemen they have. From what I've heard from him, to the media, really well-spoken guy, just a good head on his shoulders. And I think, Ben Chiarot, you forget how young he is. He's only 24 years old. He's got a bright future, and he earned it. They gave him a spot, and it was because of injuries, as you mentioned. But when he went into the lineup, I mean, you know, he got the job done. He did what he was supposed to do out there. And so it's nice that they got that contract done. And as you mentioned, you know, the contract is very favorable for both sides, really, right? You know, he gets the comfort of the 2-year contract, and it's relatively speaking, when you see what some of these other defensemen are making, you know, this is probably the best deal that's been signed in the NHL in a while.
Well, this is just, this is a general manager using the leverage that he has available to him, and a player who doesn't have, absolutely. No problems with this contract. This makes perfect sense. The Anthony Peluso one, a little bit more of some question marks around it, but ultimately, if you're willing to eat it and if you're willing to send him down, who
ultimately,
cares?
Ultimately, we're talking about, I'm not sure if they are, that's the question, but ultimately we're talking about $1.5 million approximately of contract, which is like
a drop
Dustin
in the bucket.
Byfuglien's like sneezes and he makes that much money.
That's before we go to break. Let's hear from Ben Chiarot. We'll play us right into break. This is Ben Chiarot. He was on with H&L earlier in the week talking about his new contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, I'm obviously very excited. It's a contract like this is something I've been striving for since I turned professional, and I'm excited to be a Jet for another 2 years. I mean, I love playing in front of that crowd at MTS, and I love living in Winnipeg. So this is obviously a very exciting time for me.
It happens fast, Ben. You start last season in the American Hockey League, and all of a sudden you get your chance to play. And then, today it's announced a 2-year deal, a 1-way deal, guaranteed money. This is an accomplishment that not many people reach in the hockey world. Have you spent a little time reflecting today on how far you've come?
Oh, absolutely. I remember, being in the American League, for those couple of years and thinking like all the guys want the same thing. It's that one-way contract. And, to finally get one is, it's a good feeling.
You look at 17, do they need a goalie? Maybe they feel they want to get a goalie. Maybe they feel that one of the goalies is there. But that'll be an option for them, because I think Samsonov is a big-time goalie. Do I think they will take a goalie? No. But I start to look at some of the forwards, some guys that can move well and some guys that have skill. I look at some of the defensemen, and you think about how the Winnipeg Jets are formed with respect to their roster. They have some players that could fit in with that group. So I think those options are going to be plentiful at 17 and 25. I don't think that they're going to run out of any options, but I think there's three things you can expect out of Winnipeg Jets draft pick. They're going to be competitive, they're going to be smart, and they're going to be able to skate.
TSN's Craig Button speaking about the upcoming NHL draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, the draft is, the first round will have been completed. It's 6 days from now. The second through seventh rounds will be occurring at this precise moment next Saturday. Ezzy will be down there along with Dave Manouk of LegalCurve.com. Of course, Hassan Gary, H&L, will be there as well. So we'll have complete coverage here on TSN 1290, both Friday night's first round and then Saturday's rounds 2 through 7. And the Winnipeg Jets, with their 2 first-round picks, are certainly a team of intrigue entering into this draft. The Jets have never been, we hear draft and develop ad nauseum, as if any other team is doing something different. But I think that if there is ever a chance the Jets would possibly make a trade with one of their first-round picks, it might be this year to try and get a proven NHL player, perhaps for the second of the 2 first-round picks that they have.
I think you're definitely going to see movement this year, not from the Winnipeg Jets specifically. You're going to see movement just because, as you mentioned, it's one of the best drafts in the last decade or 12 years or so since the 2003 draft, guys. I don't know necessarily that the Winnipeg Jets move one of their picks just because I think that if you look at what they've done in the past with the draft picks, Again, we don't have any. We're not privy to any information that they're considering it or they might consider it. I just think that they're going to use the picks. It's just a hunch. I think it's just a hunch that they're going to use the pick. But I think it might be a little bit tantalizing for those teams that don't have a first-round pick. And oftentimes, Richie, you see maybe a first-round pick is traded for two second-rounders, or it's possible that that the Jets might look at trading that first-round pick for a roster player maybe who has a couple years left on his contract. But, you know, back to what Craig Button said on H&L, we played at the beginning of the segment. It's so hard to predict who the Jets are going to take, because after Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, we talked to Craig Button on our show last week. You know, he thinks, as far as he's concerned, his ratings, he has Noah Hanifin quite a bit lower. And, you know, you look at Bob McKenzie's list, he's got Noah Hanifin. Not saying necessarily that that's who they think Arizona is going to take with that third overall pick. But it's possible they go with Dylan Strome. Guys, Dylan Strome might go first overall in any other year. I mean, he's that good. He led the OHL in scoring he was close with Mitch Marner there of the London Knights. But this is such a deep draft. I think, as you mentioned, especially those top picks, those first 5 to 15 picks, even the 17th pick, they're more valuable than they are in years past. And as far as the Winnipeg Jets go, I know everybody's, you know, we've got a poll up on the website, illegalcurve.com, you know, who fans want the Jets to take. And I know, you know, you try to make these connections, Richie. You know, WHL, maybe they go with a guy like, you know, Jake DeBrus, Swift Current, or maybe they go for, if Timo Meier's there, he might go in the top 10, but if he's there, he played with Nikolai Ehlers in Halifax. Mm-hmm. I think as far as the Jets are concerned, Rich, I don't think they look at that at all. I think they have a list, and they're going to take the player they want. And so trying to predict who the Jets are going to take, who anybody's going to take. As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona goes Dylan Strome. I wouldn't be surprised if they trade the pick.
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have a pick because they don't have a team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it's hard to predict what they're going to do in 17 and 25 here, because there's so many, you know, moving parts, as you mentioned. I think if you're looking at it, your preference, you're not going to draft for need. You're going to draft best player available. I think if you're smart, I think they're going to do that. If you have a tie between blank player and blank player, I assume the Jets are going to lean towards center. They could use a center. And then the other player can be whatever, to be perfectly honest with you. I think up the middle is their biggest need. Do they need some help on the wings too? Sure. You have Morrissey coming through on D. I mean, you could do anything. I just think if you have a tie between different positions, center would be the priority as far as I'm concerned.
You know, the reason I say that, that wouldn't shock me, I mean, the last time the Jets or the Thrashers organization had a late first round pick was back in 2002. That's when they drafted Jim Slater 30th overall. So, you know, Jim Slater has certainly, has he been a difference maker? You can't say the pick was anything but a success, probably, because oftentimes when you're at the end of the first round, you know, a guy who comes in and plays, you know, 13 years in the NHL or 10 years in the NHL, and even if it's in a third line, fourth line role, that's probably a successful pick. Mm-hmm. So if you can take that pick and instead get a bona fide current NHLer who's, you know, ready to step into your lineup and doesn't need any time in the minors and it sort of has the crapshoot element already taken out of the selection, I think that's something you have to take advantage of. So you mentioned, as all those teams that don't have first round picks who might be trying to get back into the first round. Well, here, you know, here's our late first round pick. Give us a roster player. That's a trade that I think the Jets would have to seriously consider, especially with that second first round pick.
Right. And that's kind of the unknown, because I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, who's out there that the Jets could potentially target. And I know a lot of fans think that the Jets should maybe spend a little bit more money and go after, you know,
you're talking about in free agency now.
Free agency, you know, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, like a Joel Ward or a Justin Williams, who, you know, their skills are declining a little bit, Richie, but those guys are going to command quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, depending on what happens with, for example, a Jim Slater, you know, who I like, you know, if they don't sign him, you know, they're going to bring in a veteran center. It's like a Matt Cullen, somebody like that, right? So as far as the Jets are concerned, the better way to improve your team is trading those draft picks. But again, the Jets, we know they've drafted very well since 2011. Mm-hmm. And you have to think, well, we want to even draft. It's so valuable, even though the cupboard is now full, because the cupboard was not full of top draft picks. But Marcel Como and the entire scouting staff, Chevy, everybody, they deserve a lot of credit for nailing most of their draft picks. And they've had quite a few great draft picks after the first round.
This will be interesting. Yeah, they have. This will be interesting to see how they draft in the mid to late first round because we haven't seen that yet.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, the old.
I know Marcel Coma was with Atlanta before. So, I mean, there's some of the guys carried over.
Yeah.
And so they always get the blame for the poor. I always find that funny. Oh, the way they drafted before Atlanta, and now the Jets are drafting better. A lot of there are guys who still remain from those two, from those teams. But how they draft now? I mean, you're not talking top. This is their first pick out of the top 13.
Yeah,
since
Morrissey
came back.
Was the lowest pick at 13th overall.
They've been 7 to 13 for 4 years, mm-hmm. and now if you think about it, that 17th pick is almost kind of in that range because it's so deep. You almost have to take Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel out of the draft because it's almost like
There's two different drafts.
There's two different drafts. Yeah. The draft really begins at three because everybody knows who the first two picks are. They're generational players that haven't really come along since Crosby, Malkin, Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. That's how good they are, right? Well, that's how they're expected to be that good. There's no reason to think that they won't. I think Connor McDavid, the guy is incredible, what he did in the OHL this year.
If you get drafted at three by Arizona, you got to be thinking to yourself, you're happy, of course, because you're drafted in the NHL, but you've got to be thinking to yourself, what a disaster for me to start my career in.
Is it, or is it, I can make this team right away?
Well, I mean, that's a fair point.
I can make money right away, right?
I know.
I can hit my bonuses right away.
But what kind of situation are you walking into?
No
the
pressure.
NHL schedule is being released next Thursday.
No
Nobody
pressure.
Knows where they're going to be playing.
And granted, scouts don't know. They don't have a crystal ball, but you talk to some scouts and they compare a Dylan Strome to a Getzlaff or an Eric Staal. That's how good they think. A big center, he's got unbelievable offensive talent, and Ryan Strome, his brother, is a pretty darn good player. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We saw him here in Winnipeg and
he's playing for the Islanders,
and many think that he's going to be better than Ryan Strome. And you're potentially getting a franchise player with the third overall pick. I mean, there could be many good picks in this draft. I mean, this is a very deep draft. And so it's going to be very exciting to watch because not only do you have all that hype surrounding Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, you have so many teams trying to improve themselves through the draft because, as Richie's talked about quite a bit on the show, it's just so hard to do it through unrestricted free agency now. There just isn't mm-hmm. that many good players available. Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. The Jets, with 8 draft picks in total, thus far at least, in the 2015 NHL draft that gets underway next Friday, of course.
I can guarantee one thing. They're going to be very surprised that the guy fell to where he did.
They're going to be very thrilled. Thrilled. I'm thrilled that the guy was available. Everybody's available. Everybody's thrilled. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue our look around the draft-eligible prospects. We're going to focus on the Western Hockey League with our good friend Guy Flaming from the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Comes out of nowhere. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend. He's the co-host of the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Guy Flaming. Guy, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Boys, I'm happy to be back. How are you?
Very well, Guy. This is probably your real sort of time of the year here with 1 week to go before the NHL draft. I bet you're certainly busy right around this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on my way to do my own show, but it's an exciting time of year. On the Pipeline Show, we like to joke that we're like golf. We have our own four majors, and the draft is definitely one of them, and it's the last one of the year, so everything kind of builds up to this weekend or next weekend.
Absolutely, Guy. We brought you on to discuss the draft-eligible prospects from the Western Hockey League. In previous weeks, we've already done the OHL and the QMJHL, so naturally time to do the Western Hockey League. And there's a little bit of, not dissension, certainly, but everybody's got different ranks as to who the overall number one pick from the Western Hockey League is. But to your mind, is it Ivan Provorov out of Brandon? And what about his game jumps out at you so much?
what I like about Ivan Provorov is that he is very strong in all areas of the game. He's very good defensively. There's no question about that. We saw a lot of the Brandon Wheat Kings here in Edmonton. They were the first-round matchup with the Edmonton Oil Kings, and I got to see them three games in a row and a couple games during the regular season. And he was outstanding in that series in terms of his defensive game. Guys couldn't beat him wide. His mobility is outstanding. So even going up against fast skaters, he's able to angle them off. And he was winning battles in the corners against really big body guys, big strong guys. Brandon Baddock, who's, you know, a 6'3" or 6'4", 215-pound guy for the Edmonton Oil Kings, was having difficulties with Ivan Provorov because he himself is a pretty strong fella. So there's that side of his game that's outstanding. He skates so well, and he moves the puck so well. He jumps up into the attack, leads the attack sometimes on the power play. He's got the big shot. And he also has a physical edge. He's not the prototypical, or the stereotypical, rather, of the European player, where, you know, they always often get criticized for not being ready to play a North American physical style of game. That's not the case with Ivan Provorov. He can do it all. He's a pretty intriguing prospect for sure.
Yeah, Guy, we had Craig Button on last week, and he thinks Provorov is the best defenseman in this draft class, and he doesn't think it's close. So I think there's a good chance he is the first defenseman taken. We wanted to ask you about Nick Merkley. We've got a poll up on illegalcurve.com, you know, who do fans want the Jets to draft? And even though it's very hard to predict who the Jets are going to draft, Nick Merkley is leading that poll. And I know he had a great WHL playoffs and leading into the Memorial Cup. Nick Merkley, I know there's a little bit of a difference as far as where scouts have him. Craig Button's got him 11, and I know on Bob McKenzie's list he was 17 there. But I guess, what do you see Nick Merkley's ceiling as an NHLer?
Yeah, somewhat of a wild card for draft day, but what his ceiling is, I think he's a top six guy. I think you can project him to be a top six forward in the NHL. If everything works out. I mean, if it doesn't, I don't know if he's going to be a checker, so I don't think I ever see him playing as a fourth-line guy. So if he's not in your top six, he's probably your best player on your farm. But I think Nick Merkley, my concern with him was how much can he do on his own, because he's playing on such a loaded team with the Kelowna Rockets. And I'll be honest, the one game they came through Edmonton this year, he wasn't much of a factor. But at the Memorial Cup, I thought he was maybe their best player outside of Leon Draisaitl. So I thought he was a catalyst, and he was the guy leading the attack. So he impressed me at the Memorial Cup. And throughout this season, my concern was, you know, he's playing on such a deep team with so many good players on his line. I just wondered if he was not riding on their coattails, but benefiting more from such a deep team. But at the same time, there's something to be said for a guy who can be a complimentary player, that when you put him with talented players, it brings out the best of him as well. So I don't think it's necessarily a negative when I look at Nick Merkley in that regard as well. So whether he'll be there when the Jets pick at, 17?
Yeah, 17.
If he is, that would probably be a good pick for the Jets. And we know how the Jets like the WHL, and I think that fits their profile.
Matthew Barzal, you know, we talk about Nick Merkley, he's a smaller guy, 5'10". Barzal's 5'11". What can you tell us about his game?
Outstanding. He's so fast, and I think the thing that I like the most about Barzal is that he's got terrific speed, but he can operate at when he's going full speed. His stick handling is outstanding. He's a lot like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. They came up through the same system. I think they're from the same town. And so the comparisons I've always gotten for Barzal are Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Matt Duchene, and Claude Giroux. And, I mean, those are obviously lofty comparisons. Mm-hmm. But when I've seen him play, he's been outstanding. The problem is that he missed so much time this year because of a fluke knee injury. Hurt himself goofing around in the dressing room in Saskatoon. But he's an outstanding player. And I think his performance at the World U18 really established him. He was the guy that may have been on the outside of the top 10 until the tournament in Switzerland, and I think for me, he's probably in the top 7 or 8.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We are discussing the Western Hockey League's draft-eligible prospects. with Guy Flaming, the co-host of the Pipeline Show on our TSN affiliate in Edmonton. Guy, not a question specific to any WHL player, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like it's a bit of a down year in terms of the maybe number of quality first-round Western Hockey League prospects entering into this draft. Would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with that in the sense that, I mean, we've had years where there were four or five guys in the top 15, and in recent years it seems like there are a number of, there's a lot of good players, but the strength of the draft this year is so deep across North America that it's kind of pushed some of the WHL guys a little bit further down the list. I mean, we might only have two dub guys taken in the top 10, and some years we have four or five. So in that regard, yeah, it's a little less. That's not to say guys like Brandon Carlo and Paul Bittner and Jake DeBrusk, that they're not quality prospects. It's just such a strong year that even though they're good players, they get pushed down the list a little bit.
You mentioned Jake DeBrusk, of course, is the son of Louis DeBrusk, and I remember we asked you about him, I think, last time you were on, and I think, you know, especially with the Jets having that second first-round pick, you know, he's another guy that might be in play there. I guess it's safe to say that his game is not as similar to Louis DeBrusk's game as far as he's actually got quite a bit of offensive skill.
It's like Domi, yeah.
Yeah, I would, yes, you're right, exactly. It's comparing Max and Ty Domi. They're completely different players. And I think Jake DeBrusk has a lot more skill than his dad did, and I think his dad would agree with that. He put up a bunch of goals this year, and it was tough for me to see Jake DeBrusk. Every time I saw the Edmonton Oil Kings and the Swift Current Broncos play, the Oil Kings dominated the Broncos this year, so it really left me with it was hard for DeBrusk to stand out in those games. And I don't think I ever saw DeBrusk play at his best. But you look, and he's got 40-some goals this year, I believe. He's a pretty strong offensive player. And you would see bursts of what he can do. He's got terrific bursts of speed, and he's creative. I just don't think I ever saw his best. So there are probably other people who like him more, but that's not to say I still think he's probably a late first round or early second. And if the Jets were taking him with their late first-round pick, I don't think that would be a mistake in any regard.
You look at Prince George center Jansen Harkins. I don't know a lot about him. Guy, can you tell us more about his game and what you would expect from him as an NHLer if he makes NHL?
Sure. Yeah, he's got, you compare him with Merkley and Barzal, and earlier in the year they're kind of grouped together almost, similar in their size, but I think that Harkins is a little bit stockier. He's about 6'1". I want to say he's about 185 pounds, so he's got a little bit more muscle on him, and I think his two-way game, he's a bit more established that way. I think of those three guys, Barzal is the most offensive, and Harkins would be the most two-way reliable. I think he's a guy who can kill penalties for you, but he can also, I think he is a guy who can provide more offense than he's shown, and kind of the opposite of what we were talking about with Merkley, where he's got such a talented team around him. Harkins was the guy in Prince George, and there are some other guys who can contribute, but certainly not the depth that the Kelowna Rockets had with the Prince George Cougars. So I don't think we've seen the best of Harkins just yet, and might be a guy that a year from now we're looking back and saying, wow, he was still around that late in the draft, and it turns out to be a pretty good pick.
Our guest is Guy Flaming, the co-host of the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. We're discussing the Western Hockey League's draft-eligible prospects. Guy, a guy I wanted to ask you about is a guy who sort of, you know, if you look at Craig Button's list, because, you know, we're good company men here, of course, so we always look at the TSN lists, and Craig Button has Paul Bittner at number 35, and then Bob McKenzie has him at number 20. He's certainly got the height, 6'4", about 204 pounds. You know, what is it about Bittner's game that sort of has the varying evaluations of it?
Well, the good is that he's 6'4", and however many pounds you just mentioned that he is, and you look at his stats, and he's got really nice numbers. He can score. He's one of those guys, I don't think he's going to blow by anybody, take anybody wide and drive to the net that way, but he's big and strong, and he'll stand in front of the net and be a good screen and bang in loose pucks. He's got a long reach. All those things are positives. I think the downside is there's two. I don't think he's really aggressive. He's one of those guys that's 6'4", and whatever he is, 210 pounds, but plays like he's 6 feet and 185 pounds. He's not necessarily mean. I don't think he has that. He's a bit of a Dustin Penner that way. I'm sure there are some current concerns that who is he playing with? Oh, Oliver Bjorkstrand and Nick Petan, two of the most offensive guys in the WHL over the last couple of seasons. So obviously he's just sucking points off of those guys. That would be the concern. One guy has him 35, another has him 20, and that's the difference, I think, because you're looking at the pros and cons, and you're trying to figure out exactly what he can do on his own. I still like him. I think he is a first-round pick. I'll be surprised if he's still there after the 30th selection.
Yeah, we just have a couple guys, more guys we want to ask you about, and then we'll let you get to your own show. Noah Juulsen, I haven't seen him play a lot this year at all, actually, out of Everett. And I know you mentioned Brandon Carlo, and I know Craig Button sees a little bit more of an offensive upside for Noah Juulsen. What have you liked about his game? What are his strengths and weaknesses in your mind?
I think he stepped up offensively this year with the import player whose name is now slipping my mind that was drafted and he plays for the San Jose Sharks. I'm sorry, the name is slipping me. But he took on a bigger offensive role this
year. Okay.
Yes, Mueller. Thank you. Mirko Mueller. So Juulsen took on a bigger offensive role this year, and so I think his numbers took a huge jump, and that caught the attention of a lot of people. Yet when I spoke with him, when we had him on the show, he described himself as Kevin Bieksa. He's an average-sized guy, maybe even a little bit undersized, might be 5'11", but plays with a hard physical edge. And I think that's something that is attracting people this year because there aren't a lot of those guys at the top end of the draft. There's really maybe three or four guys in the first 60 picks that would be described as physical defensemen, guys that will step up and hammer a guy as he's coming across the blue line. And I think Noah Juulsen has that to his game, and that might be what sets him apart. Outside of that, he skates pretty well, he moves the puck pretty well, but I think it's his physical play that will set him apart from the other guys in the draft at around that same area.
Last question for you, Yi. Is there, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but you cover all those WHL prospects. Is there anybody right now who's not getting a lot of attention we haven't asked you about that you think, hey, he might be a pretty darn good NHL player?
The guy I think is still just scratching the surface of what he can do. His name is Austin Wagner, plays for the Regina Pats. Now, earlier this year when I first saw him, the play-by-play guy for the Oil Kings, my partner on the broadcast, Corey Graham, was telling me, watch Austin Wagner, and you'll come away a big fan. And the first game I saw him play live, he was unbelievable. He's got size. I think he's 6'1 or 6'2, and he's closing in on 200 pounds, I think, which is nice to have in a forward. But his biggest asset, he is absolutely a burner. Unbelievable speed. Speed on a guy you'd think would be 5'8 or 5'9. And his hands are starting to catch up with his feet. And that's sometimes I mention that with Barzal about how great it is to see that he can fly and still control the puck and make plays at that speed. Wagner's figuring that out now. I think with the coaching change that Regina made earlier this year, that was a big benefit for him. I think next year is going to be a huge breakout season for the Pats and for Austin Wagner. So I think he was my sleeper pick about 3 months ago, and I know everybody else started to figure him out as well. And I think he is ranked in the second round, but I would take him early in the second round as opposed to late in the second or early third.
Ranked 64th by Bob McKenzie and 67th by Craig Button. Guy Flaming is the host of the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton. He joins us to discuss the Western Hockey League's draft-eligible prospects. Guy, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get to your own program. And have a good broadcast, and thanks again for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Guy. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Guy Flaming for joining us to discuss the Western Hockey League draft eligible prospects. Still to come on the show this morning, we're going to be joined by the general manager and head coach of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League, to discuss the USHL's draft eligible prospects. And year after year, there's always more and more prospects coming out of the USHL. And this year is certainly no exception. There's a ton of talent coming out of the USHL. So we'll join by Carey Eads to discuss those prospects coming up in about 40 minutes time, and still to come in about 10 minutes time. TSN, or the new TSN senior hockey reporter, Frank Saravelli, is going to join us, talk about the league in general. This segment brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You know, Drew, I'm going to have to go see Dr. Les Rikus.
Yes.
Because as you can see right beside me, I've got a banana that I brought for my nutrition. I'm running in a race tomorrow. I don't know if you've heard. Actually, you're going to be running in it too.
We're just walking the 10K.
You're walking. Yeah. I'm participating in the Manitoba Marathon Relay.
Yes, you are.
So I'm trying to eat a little bit healthier. I've got a banana here, Richie.
Mm-hmm. What else do you have here?
Speaking of, Richie's already into his cupcake. And then you pull out these cupcakes.
And what else do you have in front of you?
Timbits.
A coffee.
And what else do you have in front of you?
Timbit. Richie brought the Timbits.
I haven't seen you say no to the Timbits.
What are you guys trying to do here? I mean, I'm trying to stay fit for my run tomorrow.
Big run tomorrow, is it?
Drinking water. You know, I've
been drinking water, drinking coffee.
Well, I mean, like, I've been keeping myself hydrated and everything.
Kept hydrated last night, too, right?
Yeah, with beer, unfortunately.
I mean, it was a Friday night, and, I'm out, and I had to have a beer, but, it's... It's gonna be a long 7 kilometers. Let me tell you.
Say you started the draft early last night.
Yeah,
that's clever. Using draft beer as a
thank you, Drew.
Thank you as a pun there. That was very clever there, Richard. A lot of talk, of course, about the Winnipeg Jets, and there had been some rumors and some rumblings earlier in the week that they were getting closer potentially to signing Drew Stafford to a contract extension. Here's the quote from Elliot Friedman. There definitely are attempts being made on an extension for Stafford in Winnipeg. One source warned against using the word optimistic, but it sounds like both sides are trying. At this point in time, 11 days ahead of...
Because that news, I don't understand. They talked about a contract and they're trying. It's like, what does that mean?
It means
all the insider reports here, they don't say anything.
They say that people are talking. That's good. I'm glad they're talking.
Yeah, they're talking. They're having conversations. You know,
conversations lead to more conversations, and those conversations sometimes lead to contracts.
I mean, that's news.
It's not really news.
They had to talk. Well, of course they talked. He's on the team. They still have control of them, and they're trying to see if they can, be shocking if they weren't talking.
11 days. Well, to that point, do you think that Frolik and Alan Walsh and then the Jets are still talking at this point, or is that...
No, it's different. It's a different ball game.
Why is it a different ball game, though? I mean, what is it? I mean, they're both UFAs on July 1st, so why is there a difference between one and the other?
Because one was available last year for signing, and before that for signing, and he wasn't signed. Another guy just came here, is from the area, has connections to some of the players on the team, not that Frolik doesn't, and this is the first chance of having an opportunity to sign the guy, and by all accounts, he's likely going to resign. Or at least they're going to have significant attempts to do so. So the fact that they're having negotiations and trying isn't exactly shocking news. I mean, yeah, sure, I guess it's news, but there's nothing really there to report. They talked. Now, Frolik is not. Also, there's no Alan Walsh factor here.
In terms of.
If Frolik wanted to sign,
he would have signed, of course.
He would have signed.
No doubt about that whatsoever. But do you expect, 11 days out? Why wouldn't Drew Stafford, head to free agency 11 days out of it?
And that's fair, Drew. I mean, in this market of average players being available on July 1, and you can negotiate before then.
Sure. When is that window open?
I believe it's June 25th.
June 25th, which is next Thursday?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, so you can talk to any pending free agents a week ahead of time.
Yes.
Which, I mean, they've done that so that July 1st, where everybody's got wall-to-wall coverage.
I'll be here with Rick Ralph.
Are you here with Rick Ralph on Canada Day?
4 hours of live coverage.
Excellent. Hopefully there's something for you to cover.
Can't wait to break down the big signing of the Jet. No, I'm kidding. it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. And it does make July 1st more exciting, Drew, as you mentioned, because you can negotiate beforehand and then announce them all at the same time. With all that said, the Stafford aspect, I know there's just going to be reports and what they get a deal done. If I'm Drew Stafford and I have a good contract offer from the Jets, I agree with you, Drew. I'm too close to free agency to not see what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I feel comfortable with what the offer, I go back and I accept it.
And even though this obviously isn't news, people want to know what's happening. We're expecting Drew Stafford to sign. At least I think there's a very good chance he signs with the Winnipeg Jets. And everything we've been told from Drew Stafford is that he enjoys Winnipeg and he liked coming over from Buffalo and being part of the playoff mm-hmm. run for the Winnipeg Jets. Even though it was short, he was a big part of that. And he played very well with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler on the second line there. And I agree with Rich. I think all of the indications weren't good for Michael Frolik re-signing because he signed the one-year deal. You didn't have a contract extension mm-hmm. mentioned. And now, you know, you're running out of time, as you mentioned. There's only 11 days left before free agency. And right now, Drew, it's kind of just a question of, you know, making those numbers work. And, you know, is it $4 million a year, which he made this past year? Is it $5 million a year? Probably somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's mm-hmm. 5 years, $5 million is what you hear for Michael Frolik as well.
I just don't get it.
And I think Drew Stafford, that money is better spent on Drew Stafford, quite frankly. I think he fits into what the Jets do better than Michael Frolik. Michael Frolik is a Swiss Army knife. He's a good hockey player. I think he fades a little bit offensively, but I think especially Drew Stafford, I mean, on Buffalo, you know, he was playing on a very young team. Not that the Jets don't have youth too, but I think the expectations are higher for Drew Stafford, and I think a player like him really brings out the best in Mark Scheifele, as does Blake Wheeler. They're veteran guys. So even though this isn't news, I think it is encouraging, and I wouldn't be too surprised if we do hear that Drew Stafford signs before July 1st.
You know, if he signs a $5 million a year contract, and he's, you know, he's going to tap out at, you know, 50 points, give or take. That's where, that's been his career high. You know, I guess that's what you pay for a 50-point guy at this point in time.
In the UFA market, you're going to pay it. I mean, I said earlier, a couple months ago, I thought he was worth about 4 years, about $18 million, so $4.5 a year. I thought that's what he'd land.
A little bit of a raise on the $4
million. I still think he'll land about there, but we'll see. And you know what, Drew, where Frolik lands, I don't know. There's different players in terms of what you need on your roster. I think the Jets as a team that kind of needs some, you know, Stafford is more of a goal scorer than Frolik is. And does this team value the goal scoring ability of that player more than they do with Frolik's flexibility and Swiss Army knife ability, as he mentioned? Well, I think you probably do, especially when you need to replace that in your top six and you don't want to put pressure on a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers to be too productive too quickly. So I think these are factors as well. And the problem is that the currency is not only money, it's term in this CBA because it's so restrictive now. So you have to offer an extra year. So if you think he's really worth a three-year deal, which probably sounds more reasonable, you have to get a fourth year if you want to get him. That's how it works.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli to talk about the league in its entirety. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the new TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli. Frank, good morning, and thanks for joining us. And first and foremost, congratulations.
Good morning, guys. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the warm welcome, and always good to be back with some old friends.
Yes, indeed, Frank. Obviously, we brought you on. We're going to talk about the sort of league in its entirety now that the Stanley Cup Finals have concluded. Sort of the hot stove season can begin with the draft a week from now, and then free agency, 11 days from now. Are you expecting it to be sort of an active period of time leading up to next Friday's draft?
Yeah, I really am. I do think it'll be an active time just because there are a bunch of teams that we've seen that are sort of in salary cap jail, so to speak, that need to make some sort of move. And then there's other teams that are like the Leafs where they're in a rebuilding mode and they'd like to sort of start fresh. And then there's a few other teams that clearly weren't happy with their season and how it went. Certainly the teams that didn't make the playoffs, but also the teams that had their first round exits that were really disappointing. I look at a team like St. Louis, they're a team that could be making some moves here. So certainly a bunch of interesting names will be on the market for sure.
Frank, I know you were reporting this earlier this week about Vinny LeCavalier and the buyout period coming up, and you know, Vinny LeCavalier coming out with his agent saying that he's not going to retire. I guess, do you see any circumstances where he isn't playing for Philadelphia next year?
Well, I think that's probably more likely than him playing for the Flyers, just in the sense that from what we have to go on so far is that Ron Hextall said at the end of last season that Vinny LeCavalier is not working with the Flyers, and it's certainly not working for the Flyers to have him there. So I would certainly expect some sort of move. I really don't know what it is, because at this point the Flyers don't seem all that interested in buying him out. At least they haven't communicated that part to his agent. They have in the past given his agent permission to seek a trade, but it's going to be really hard to pull off because he's due a $2 million signing bonus on July 1, so no team is going to take him now and then pay him that on July 1. And also, you're dealing with a player who's declining rapidly. I think he has a lot more in the tank left than what he's been able to show, just because he hasn't been put in a situation to really succeed with the Flyers, especially last season. But he's a guy that has a really large cap hit still at $4.5 million, and certainly there's a lot of teams that are struggling to stay under the cap, and he wouldn't help at all. So he would have to be a small market to mid-market team that would be interested, and the big thing is the Flyers are going to need to eat salary, and so far they haven't expressed any willingness to do so. Ron Hextall has not been sending out memos to teams saying, look, I'm interested in moving Vinny LeCavalier, here's what I'm willing to do, here's what I'm looking for, and instead he's saying, yeah, you can go seek a trade to his agent Kent Hughes, but you know, I'm not giving you any details on what I may or may not even be willing to pay. So until that's sorted out, I have a hard time believing that he's going anywhere.
Frank, before you headed over to TSN, you had a great feature in the Philadelphia Daily News about new Flyers head coach Dave Hextall. You went to Grand Forks and kind of, you know, learned more about Hextall and what makes him the coach that he is. Can you talk about that experience and give us more insight into Hextall?
Yeah, thank you for that. It was really a great trip for me. First off, it's a place that I don't really get to see all that often. I've never been there before, never been to North Dakota. Obviously, it's not too far from you guys, but mm-hmm. The thing for me was, when Dave Hextall was hired in Philadelphia, the reaction from a lot of fans was, we hired a guy from North Dakota? Like, they don't really understand, I don't want to say understand college hockey, but they don't understand exactly what kind of program he was coming from, and I wanted to go there and sort of paint the picture of, you know, this is a marquee Division I program that's run like an NHL team. Their facility is absolutely incredible. The amount of time and effort that they put into developing their players is top-notch. You go to North Dakota because you want to play in the NHL, or you want a shot to play in the NHL, and they've obviously had a lot of success turning out NHL players. Look at Jonathan Toews, Matt Green, Stanley Cup winners. Players that really are impact players as well, and it's just a phenomenal program. And just to get a sense of the sort of the job that Dave Hextall had there as CEO, really I think did a lot for Flyers fans to explain, you know, where he's coming from.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli, discussing the league as a whole. Frank, moving away from the Flyers organization to another organization just sort of down the road in state in Pennsylvania, and that's the Penguins. We've heard lots of talk since they were weekly eliminated in the playoffs and they barely squeaked into the playoffs, that maybe they need to change up the core, that maybe Evgeny Malkin wants to move on to a different place, and that the Penguins should be looking to trade him. Do you believe, A, that they would be ever better off without Evgeny Malkin, and B, do you think there's truth to the rumors that he might be looking to go somewhere else?
Well, it's a hard thing to discuss. Honestly, I, in my heart of hearts, I believe that Evgeny Malkin isn't thrilled with the direction that the Penguins have been trending in the last few years. I don't think any player there is really happy with the progress that they've made, or I guess, you know, the how far downhill they've gone since winning the Stanley Cup in 2009. And I think that's human nature. And he's been there a long time. I think it's salvageable, though. I think there's a way that they can make him happy, and I think one of the ways to do that is to go out and find a permanent winger to play with him, keep his line consistent, and perhaps even try and figure out if you can bring in a fellow Russian that, could really help him out and change his attitude and mindset about the team. And I think that's certainly doable, and I think that's something that's on Jim Rutherford's list for this summer.
Frank, there's a lot of eyes on Toronto right now for a lot of reasons, and not just Mike Babcock and what's going on with all the changes there, but because of the situation with the Toronto Maple Leafs rebuilding, not to mention the fact that they've got a high draft pick, but with Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel, and then Jonathan Bernier with this business with the Instagram account. I guess, first of all, do you think Jonathan Bernier is going anywhere, and Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, what's the likelihood of them moving as well?
Well, I think Bernier will end up staying in Toronto. I think they'll end up working that out over time. With Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, I think that's a little bit of a different story. And I think we're really going to find out a lot in the next 2 weeks about, how much of what the Maple Leafs brass has been saying. You look back to the Babcock press conference and there was all this talk about this is going to be a painful process. This is going to take a long time. To stick to the plan. We need to stick to the plan and do things the right way. And I think in some ways we're going to find out whether that was lip service or not, because I think in the next few weeks there are going to be deals available for Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf to both leave town. And I think it's just a matter of the Leafs figuring out, what they're willing to accept for these two guys. Obviously, they're talented players. I don't think you can make the argument that if Phil Kessel isn't here in October, that the Leafs are a better team. But certainly if he's gone, then the rebuilding process is in full swing. And I think if you look at some of the teams that have done the rebuilding process and have done it the right way, look no further than Chicago. Pittsburgh was on that same track in the early 2000s before they got Crosby. There's only really one way to do it. And I think Maple Leafs brass understands that. It's just a matter of everyone being on the same page and also figuring out, what kind of worth they're willing to accept, because there have been pretty decent offers, from what I'm told, on the table for both those players over the last, 6 months to move them. And it can be done. It can be done in the next few weeks. It's a matter of what they're willing to accept.
Frank, you covered Kimmo Timonen for the Flyers for many years, and of course just seeing him win the Cup, although in a limited role, still seeing him win the Cup and being the second guy to carry the Cup after Jonathan Toews. Can you talk about Kimmo Timonen as a person?
What a guy. I mean, honestly, I could not be more thrilled for him. He's a guy that really put his heart and soul into this last year and trying to just get back. Just the fact that he was even on the ice, let alone for the Blackhawks and holding a Stanley Cup, it was just an incredible thing to see. I mean, he was diagnosed with multiple blood clots in August. A lot of people thought that his career would be over at that point, even a foregone conclusion. He's a 39-year-old guy about to turn 40, and he looked like he was slowing down a little bit last season. And then all of a sudden, he goes through this process where he has multiple, I'd say tens of hours spent with doctors and flying, around the country to try and make sure that if he decides to come back and play, that he's okay to do so. And he knew that his window was going to be really short. This is the last year of his deal. And he was able to orchestrate that trade with Ron Hextall, saying, look, this is the place. Chicago is the place that I want to go. And, of course, he picked a great team. But, there's a lot of things that need to happen along. A lot of other guys need to stay healthy, need to be part of the team and contributing. And, of course, he ends up getting in there in the Stanley Cup final and played a limited role, as you said. But, just the fact that he said he was crying on the bench when that second goal went in Game 6 really says a lot. He's just a class act, and I couldn't be happier for him.
TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the league as a whole. Frank, another guy you're familiar with from your time covering the Philadelphia Flyers is their former goaltending coach, Jeff Reese. Just got hired in Dallas, where they need to sort of get a rebound year from Kari Lehtinen, who certainly struggled last year, and the Stars organized team as a whole struggled last year. Jeff Reese sort of left the Flyers under not the best circumstances. Do you think he's going to be a good addition to the Stars organization and can help sort of get Kari Lehtinen back on track?
I do. I really have a lot of respect for Jeff Reese and the job that he did in Philadelphia. You know, the funny thing is, before he got here, a lot of people viewed Philly as a goaltending graveyard. And even during part of his tenure here, you look at the disaster with Ilya Brizgalov, or should I say the Brizaster. And since then, Steve Mason has come in here, and he totally resurrected Steve Mason's career almost single-handedly, because he's a guy that he was very familiar with Steve Mason before. They actually shared the same agent from when Jeff was a player. He kept tabs on Steve, watched video, and then when he was suddenly available, he went to Flyers general manager Paul Holmgren and said, look, I think I can make it work with this guy. They brought him in here for next to nothing, paid him next to nothing for the next season. And last year, Steve Mason ended up having a .950 even strength save percentage after November 1st. That's like a span of 46 games. I think he was second only to Devan Dubnyk during that time, who, of course, had a tremendous season himself. And I think the sad part for Mason and the Flyers is that he wasn't able to get them into the playoffs. But I don't think goalie graveyard, or people are no longer snickering about Steve Mason and laughing and saying that he isn't a guy that's capable of carrying a team at this point. And that is a lot due to Jeff Reese and both the time that he put in with the technical aspect, but also more importantly, I think at this level, is the job that he did mentally, you know, propping up Steve Mason, making sure that he was confident and really confident in his abilities to be an NHL starting goaltender. And I think the proof was on the ice.
Frank, final question here. At the end of the season, you know, Sidney Crosby surprised some by heading over to the World Championships, and he played on the same team as Claude Giroux, and they apparently have had a rift in the past. And not only did he play on the same team, they played on the same line, whether it be on the power play or I think even at 5-on-5 for a while. Is that rift in the past? Is that just it still exists and they just put it aside for that tournament, or has that been overblown?
I'm not sure personally what if there's, you know, all that much of a rift. I think they just, you know, they're competitors and they don't like each other. And I think that's human nature in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's funny. They said that they really enjoyed each other's company. Apparently, Claude said that when he came back. And, you know, he really learned a lot as a player just watching him. But he said as soon as the Flyers play the Penguins again, he said, I'm sure we'll go right back to being our old self. So, you know, just nice to see them, two of the premier talents in the league, you know, working together for Canada to win that gold and bring it back to Canada, I think was a special feeling for both of them.
Frank Saravelli is TSN's new senior hockey reporter. He joins us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Frank, appreciate your time. Congratulations on the new job, and hopefully you'll still have time to make it down here to Winnipeg to see us in the course of the year.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Take care, Frank. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Maybe run around and put your car on cruise, lay back, because this is summertime. Summer, summer, summertime. They've waited a long time for this to be at home. Slipped in front and Crawford another block. Five to go. For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions. The episodes in life that last so many years in memory are measured in fleeting moments as they happen. Joel Quenneville celebrates with his team. Patiently waiting are the Lightning. The legendary Doc Emrick on NBC Sports with the call of the Chicago Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup championship earlier this week in 6 games over the Tampa Bay Lightning. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli. Has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I must give props first and foremost to you, Richard, and to Ezra. You both predicted accurately that the Blackhawks would win the Stanley Cup final in 6 games.
Oh, thank you, Drew.
Yes. Very rare that I'm going to give credit where credit is due, and
yeah,
in this instance, I will.
It was a good playoff, as he did well in his predictions.
Mm-hmm. So that props to both of you for that. You know, finally, the season's over. I can say that. It seems like it's as usual. It seems like it takes forever. But the Blackhawks, of course, victorious in in the six games. And I think the Lightning are sort of going to look back at that series and say, you know, had game one ended differently, where they had the late lead. And has if game one ends differently, maybe the series ends in a different manner than them losing in six. But, you know, Don Cherry criticized John Cooper for his usage of Steven Stamkos on Twitter at the end of the series. And, you know, we talked about it last week on the show. It seems like I think Joel Quenneville outcoached John Cooper, which, you know, isn't necessarily a shock given Quenneville's experience in the Stanley Cup Finals. But I do think that the Lightning have some room to improve upon, and they've learned a lot probably from their loss in the Stanley Cup Finals.
They did learn a lot, Drew, but you know, it's no guarantee to ever get back. And I think that was something that was hammered home during the course of the broadcast this playoffs, is that you never know. I mean, this is a league that this is not really. We're not talking about Colorado or Dallas kind of dispatching Edmonton five tough games in the first round in the late 90s and maybe having a tough second round match and then just going up against another dominant team in that conference finals. We're talking about a league now where Nathan Horton scores in game seven against the Habs in, what, 2011 when the Bruins won the Cup. And, you know, you look at Alex Burrows scoring game seven overtime against Chicago when Vancouver lost in seven to the Bruins that year. I mean, both of those first round teams won in overtime. I mean, both of those Stanley Cup final teams won game seven overtime in the first round. Like, it can go either way. And this season, too, I mean, Tampa Bay, you can say the same thing about Detroit. Detroit doesn't blow game four, was it, against Tampa Bay. They're probably winning the first round. And then they lost to them in game seven and probably outplayed them in the series. So I think Chicago, on the other hand, was probably the better team, and I know they were the better team in all seven. I mean, all four series they played. I think they earned it. And what's interesting to me, though, moving away from Tampa Bay for a second, is Chicago and the dynasty term, because I would think I am of the belief that they are probably a dynasty. But on the other hand, I think my argument would be, are they a dynasty if LA has won two championships within the three championships they've won? Because you can't have, like, if LA wins next year,
they're both dynasties. This is the decade of the Kings and the Blackhawks.
No, hold on.
Okay.
Can you have two dynasties at the same time?
Yeah, I think you can.
Can you?
Sure. I think you, I mean, these are,
that's the question to me. Not if they're a dynasty. Well, that's the first question. The second question is, can you have two dynasties? Now, the Kings is winning two cups are not a dynasty. You need to win three.
Yeah.
In this day and age, 3 and 6 years, I think, probably constitutes a dynasty. But if the Kings were to win next year, and now if you date back to the Hawks' first cup, I mean, I don't know if you can have two dynasties at the same time.
Richie, in the post-salary cap world, I think you can.
I think any world.
You know, this isn't the you're not going to have a New York Islanders or an Edmonton Oilers anymore just because the nature of the game doesn't allow for it. But the nature of the game wasn't supposed to allow for one team to win three cups in 6 years. This was supposed to be the era of parity where a different team every year wins the Stanley Cup. Well, it's not happening that way. It's the era of the Blackhawks, and it's the era of the Los Angeles Kings, especially if they bounce back next year.
See, I think the problem is that we have to call something a dynasty. Like, I think that by the popular definition, as Drew mentioned, in today's world of sports...
When did Merriam-Webster come into the studio?
In today's world, Richie, of sports where there is no Chicago Bulls, there is no, as you mentioned, New York Islanders, Edmonton Oilers, I think that for the definition of what a dynasty is now, the Chicago Blackhawks are a dynasty. But to me, you don't need to call it a dynasty. They're a great hockey team, and they've been a great hockey team for many years now. And to me, that's...
I don't care about that. I want to know if you think they're a dynasty.
No, but I think they are based on what are definite... Like, the Edmonton Oilers were a dynasty, and going back in the 70s and 60s, the Montreal Canadiens, that's a dynasty. Like, they won Stanley Cups in a row and for extended period of time. Extended period of time is an extended period of time, 6 years. And as you mentioned, there's Stanley Cups between those that the LA Kings won, and obviously the Boston Bruins. I think if you need to call it a dynasty, which I don't need to call it a dynasty. Like,
Celtics and the Lakers as dynasties at the same time.
If you're going to look back 20 years from now, fast forward 20 years in the future, when, God help us, we won't be doing the show anymore at that point in time. But 20 years in the future, 30 years in the future.
I'm kidding.
If you're going to look back 20 years from now, 30 years from now, and say, you know, what is that era remembered as? And it's remembered as the Kings era, and it's remembered as the Blackhawks era. To me, that's a dynasty. you're not going to remember from the year 2000 through the year 2010 as that being anybody's era. Whose era was that? There was a different team that won the Cup practically every season at that point in time.
Probably the Detroit Red Wings era, if any.
So. Yeah, if any.
They won two Cups. They won and lost two in the Cups. Final and,
right, they lost to Pittsburgh.
Even, I know you're going to get mad, but Devils. I mean, even throw the Devils in there. Sure. They went to three finals and won two Cups. Actually, you throw in the 2012. Went to the finals. That's four finals in 12 years. So
right, but depending on how the latter half of this decade plays out, and who knows. But right now, you're going to remember 2009 through 2015 as being the era of the Kings and the Blackhawks.
The interesting part to me also is that the Blackhawks team that won this week is not anywhere close to as good as the Blackhawks team that won in 2009. Was it 10? Let's mix it up. Nine was Pittsburgh, so 10.
The 2009-2010 season,
yeah.
Sure.
Well, 10, like, you look at that team compared to this team, it's not even close.
You know what? I disagree.
Through the teams.
I think that team is better, but if you look at, I guess I'm agreeing, but I don't think it's, I don't as strongly agree with that, because you look at this team, Richie, and the core is the same, obviously, right? Different goaltender. Antti Niemi was in net.
Yeah, they're about the same, whatever.
But the key players are the same, right? So what's the difference? So you had Dustin Byfuglien.
Andrew Ladd. A better Christopher Stieg.
Troy Brower.
But I still think Brian Campbell.
The level that Duncan Keith was playing at,
yeah, it was
is
great.
Higher. And I think that the level that Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are playing at is higher. And I think it's more impressive that they've done it in a year where they didn't have a good regular season. So I guess I'm agreeing with you. But the fact that we're talking about, are they a dynasty, doesn't that make them a dynasty? Like, do you ever talk about a team being a dynasty without it deserving?
Means, yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, obviously, and Gary Bettman making the comment after the Cup came finally, which was nice.
only the NHL could screw that up. I know.
It was in Vince Vaughn's limo the whole time.
but, you know, I think the Hawks are a dynasty, and I guess the Kings need to win one more to get that title as well.
I'm fine with that point on your part. Right now, this is the Blackhawks era in my mind. If the Kings were to win one more,
then it's even,
and they're both there. This is the decade.
That'd be a great storyline for the seasons after. Who can get that next?
Can get the fourth cup? I mean, I would be surprised if the Kings don't bounce back.
I would too.
And I think the Blackhawks will probably take not a step back next year, but I just think that at the amount of hockey that the Blackhawks play as a result of, you know, winning the Cup and going to the conference finals the year before, and then you add in all the, you know, the Olympics and everything else, I think that next year will probably be a bit of a down year.
Very possibly, Drew, but these guys like half sleepwalk through the season.
I know they do.
You watch them play this year in the regular season. They're a different team than the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. They know when to turn it on.
They get it on by skill. See, the thing about the Kings is different than the Hawks. The Hawks can beat you by sheer skill. The Kings have to execute their game plan and play a more physical style and win a lot of close games. And, you know, you get bounces every once in a while. Chicago can just beat you on skill when they really want to.
And the Kings, I mean, they have the whole summer off. They didn't play any.
It'll help them.
Yeah, the beginning of April. So they'll have, and that's probably hungry. You don't think that watching the Blackhawks win provides the Kings motivation?
It's better for the league, for sure.
Well, you have two teams that, I mean, they happen to play against each other, you know, in the conference finals, so it's not in the... But, I mean, for the last however many number of years, the Western Conference finals have been the Stanley Cup finals,
true.
In all intents and purposes.
And the Kings are in a weak division right now.
Yeah.
Still. I mean, so that week, I mean, you got McDavid in there now. It's going to be a little bit different, but...
And Calgary's better, and...
Yeah, I mean, but I think next year, you know, will those teams be up to the task? So I like the storylines that you have. I mean, Tampa. The problem with the Cup final for me is that Tampa Bay provided no storylines versus Chicago,
mm-hmm.
And I thought it looked like a little bit tired hockey at the end. These teams, you know, that war of attrition, I thought was very apparent.
And I know that you don't want to. I know this is going to come out, and you know, it's excuses, but I mean, Tyler Johnson and was not 100%, and I think this is a different. And Ben Bishop was not 100%. They weren't even close to 100%. I mean, Tyler Johnson, he wasn't taking the faceoffs.
Yeah.
And I think if Ben Bishop's healthy and Tyler Johnson is healthy, there's a better chance that series goes to seven games and it's a little bit more entertaining. But I still think it was a great Cup Finals. I know you guys disagreed with me a little bit, but
I mean, I thought it was solid. I don't think there's anything to write home about. I've seen better final.
It's not a memorable final.
People like the scoring chances and all these things were even, so it was a great final. I mean, it was okay. I mean, I didn't have anybody come up to me and say, oh, hey that
isn't
was...
Isn't this riveting?
Isn't this riveting?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you'll remember 3 years from now anything that happened in this series.
Remember who wins the Cup.
That's it.
I mean, I think that Chicago-Philly final, even the Chicago-Boston final, with the way it ended in Game 6,
like that, the two goals
in like seconds. Like,
yeah, it was going to be going back to game seven, and I think what Lucic scored 10 minutes left in the third period. I mean, you remember those things. This one, it just didn't have that same.
Nothing about it captured the imagination.
Yeah,
and that's okay. It happens. Not every year is going to be great. Let's head to break. When we come back, Kerry Eads, the general manager and head coach of the Fargo Forest of the USHL, is going to join us to talk about the
USHL.
USHL.
Oh, okay.
To talk about the draft eligible prospects from that league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.